have anything to worry about, son. I guarantee that my men won't bother your mother or sister. That's a promise. And he held out his right hand. Theo glanced at his mother, thinking, I've got no choice. Reluctantly, he took Valker's hand in his own. The three of them went with Valker to the airlock. Theo couldn't help but be envious as he watched the man pull on his nanofabric spacesuit. I'll be back with two men to help you install a new set of antennas, Valker promised as he pulled the suit's cowling over his head and inflated it into a clear bubble. Once that's done, we'll transfer enough hydrogen to get you back to Ceres.
That will be wonderful, Pauline said.
Valker grinned at her, always happy to help a lovely lady in distress. He waved and stepped into the airlock. Theo punched out the code that sealed the hatch and started the airlock cycling. Once the hatch shut and the panel lights indicated the lock was pumping down to vacuum, Pauline swung around and slapped her daughter on the face, hard. Angela was too stunned to cry. Theo saw the stinging marks of his mother's fingers on Angie's face, white against her reddened cheek.
"Talking about sex," Pauline hissed. "Are you crazy? 10 sex-starved men, and you make them think..."
Her voice faltered.
"I didn't mean..."
Angela said, her voice quavering. Theo tried to get his mother's attention.
"I couldn't refuse his help. They'd just come aboard anyway."
Pauline said,
"Thee, get your sister out of sight. Find a place to hide her. I don't want those men to get a glimpse of her while they're on board our ship."
"What about you, Mom?"
"I can take care of myself," Pauline said. "It's Angie I'm worried about."
Theo started to object. Before he could, though, Pauline said in a softer tone,
"I'm an old lady, Thee. You saw the way that man was staring at Angie. He had no interest in me."
"I'm not so sure, Mom. Thee, we don't have time to debate the issue. Get Angie to a safe hideaway quickly, before they all come aboard."
Back at Vogeltoat, Valker's crew crowded around him as soon as he stepped through the airlock hatch.
"What's the word, Skipper? What's going on over there? How big a crew? What about the women?"
Valker silenced them with a gesture, then broke into his widest grin. Just like he said over the radio, one crewman, a teenaged kid, and two women, a mother and her daughter, both good-looking. The daughter's hot to trot, too. They all laughed. Nico asked,
"What about the mother?"
"Good-looking, like I said. Elegant. Tries to be cool, but it'll be fun melting her down."
Cellini, Hotel Luna. Alex Humphreys personally escorted Yuan and Tamara Vyshinsky to the Hotel Luna. Although the hotel's formal entrance was up in the main plaza, a wide, powered stairway led down to the lobby, past sheets of genuine liquid water that slid down tilted slabs of granite quarried from the lunar highlands. "The water's recycled, of course," Alex said as they glided down the stairway. "It looks pretty impressive, though, here on the moon." Yuan nodded appreciatively, and noticed that Tamara was standing as close to Humphreys as she could without climbing into his clothes. There were pools of limpidly clear water on either side at the bottom of the stairway, with fish swimming in them. "Aquaculture," Humphreys commented. "Cellini gets more protein per unit of energy input from fish than from meat animals."
"You mean people eat those fish?"
Tamara asked, her eyes wide and fixed on Humphreys. He nodded. "You can pick one out for your dinner." She laughed appreciatively. The hotel lobby was bigger than any Yuan had ever seen, lavishly carpeted and decorated with oriental tables and comfortable leather-covered easy chairs. Ornate displays of artificial flowers sprouted from imitation Ming vases. Humphreys walked them to the reception desk, where a bowing assistant manager led them to adjoining rooms two levels below the lobby.
"This is our bottom floor," the slightly pudgy man said in a self-effacing whisper. "Our very best."
He opened the door and motioned Yuan inside. Impressive, Yuan thought. Roomy without being too big. Nice decorations.
One entire wall was a smart screen that showed, at the moment, a satellite view of the Grand Canyon on Mars. "Thanks," he said to Humphreys. "You're comped for everything," Alex told him. "For 3 days. Then we leave for the belt."
"May I add," murmured the assistant manager, "that our shops up on the lobby level offer the very latest designer fashions and a complete line of accessories."
Yuan realized the man was telling him that he needed some new clothes. He nodded wordlessly and closed his door.
"And your room is here," the assistant manager said, opening the next door.
Tamra looked inside. "Very luxurious," she said to Humphreys. The assistant manager handed her the key chip, glanced at Humphreys, then bowed and scurried down the corridor. "I think you'll be comfortable," Humphreys said. Tamra realized he was several centimeters taller than his father, clone or no clone. Looking up at him, she asked, "Would you like to come in?" He smiled.
"I don't think that would be wise."
"Really?" she breathed.
"Look," he said, "I've pulled you out of a cesspool full of trouble. My father isn't happy with you."
"It wasn't me who let Harbin and the old woman go," Tamra said. "Yuan did that."
"But you killed Commander Ballestos, didn't you? He didn't just conveniently drop dead. You stuck a knife in his ribs."
Humphreys could see sudden anger flare in her eyes, but she controlled it immediately. "It was wrong, I know," she said contritely. "But he wouldn't have allowed us to see the artifact."
"That's no reason to kill a man."
"You're right," she murmured, her head drooping. She looked up at him through lowered lashes and added, "I realize that now, since the artifact."
"There's been enough killing," Alex Humphreys said. "Too much. Now we're going out to the artifact and try to understand it, learn from it."
"If that's what you want."
"That's what I want," he said fervently. "My father doesn't want the IAA or the universities near it, and I think he's right about that. But he can't stop me."
"Of course he can't."
"I'll need your help, yours and Yuan's."
"I'll do whatever you want me to," Tamra said, her head still lowered. Alex tucked a finger under her chin and lifted her face.
"You will?"
"Anything," she whispered. He stepped into the hotel room with her and pushed the door shut. She realized that this man was his father's clone, after all.
Cargo ship Pleiades. Bridge. "You're talking to yourself," Victor Zacharias muttered. "It's not a good sign." "So who else do I have to talk to?" he asked silently. "I'm a wanted thief in Ceres. I can't chat with anyone there." He got up from the command chair and strode the 4 paces it took to go from one end of the bridge to the other, then back again. "Maybe I should go to the gym, work up a sweat." Instead, he returned to the command chair and turned on the comm console. He scanned the news channels constantly, desperately hoping for some word about Syracuse. For months he had plotted possible trajectories for his ship, paths through the belt that were based on little more than guesswork. "I don't have a firm fix on what her position was when I left the ship, and I have no idea of what Pauline might have done with the propulsion fuel we had left in the tanks, or how much fuel was left, or how she might try to swing into a trajectory that'll bring them back toward Ceres." It was madness to attempt to calculate where Syracuse might be, but it was a madness that kept Victor sane. Otherwise he would be cruising blindly through the belt, a single ship trying to find another speck of a ship in the enormous, vast emptiness. His dreams were racked with nightmares. He saw one disaster after another. The ship struck by an asteroid that ripped her apart. Pauline and the kids flung into the vacuum, their eyes bursting from their heads, their screams piercing his skull. Or, drifting out to Jupiter, the ship's systems failing one by one, dying of hunger, of thirst, suffocating as the air recyclers failed and they all choked to death, emaciated and helpless. The broadcasts from Ceres were strictly utilitarian, traffic reports for the most part.